From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for November 12, 2021. The Packers are back home this Sunday with the Seattle Seahawks, and the LA Lakers with LeBron James make their annual visit to Milwaukee this Wednesday. Let's start with some irony. The number one shoplifted book in America is the Bible. Apparently, the thieves didn't read the seventh commandment, which is, thou shalt not steal. A Boulder, Colorado man got his mother's house on fire. He set it on fire and it burned to the ground, and he did it with a blowtorch. He was trying to get rid of cobwebs. He may have to find another basement to live in. A naked Florida man got arrested for stealing a state patrol car. Oh, I bet those vinyl seats were hot. Canada is open again. Their tourism board asked the locals to come up with a marketing slogan to attract American tourists. Here are some of the best submissions. Canada, where winter spends the summer. Canada, land of cheaper drugs. And my personal favorite, Canada. It's not just for draft dodgers anymore. Elon Musk this week asked Twitter if he should sell some of his Tesla stock. Elon, baby, if you need financial advice, our phone number is 223-1099. And our headline of the week is from the Bozeman Chronicle. Police begin campaign to run down jaywalkers. On the podcast today, we have Dave Sandstrom, Chris Evers, Kendall Bauer, and wrapping up the week, here's Bob Landis.
Thanks, Max. We broke our eight-day winning streak for the market on Tuesday, and stock kind of lost ground for most of the rest of the week. NASDAQ gave up 0.7% this week, losing 111 points, closed at 15,861. S&P 500 gave up 0.3%, losing 15 points to close at 4683. The Dow Jones Industrial Average shed 0.6%, losing 228 points. Still above 36,000. We close at the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week at 36,100. 10-year Treasury went up a tad. Not too bad, though, considering that ugly inflation report went from 1.45% to 1.58% by this afternoon. Year-to-date, what's not to like? NASDAQ up 23%, S&P up over 26%. Dow held back by Boeing and Disney, still up a respectable 19.7%. That's a quick look at the weekly review. Dave, you'd expect a little bit of profit taking after a huge run in the market that we saw in October. Stocks were up almost 7%, continued into November. Really good earnings numbers. So I wasn't the least bit surprised to see a little bit of a pullback this week.
Yeah, Rob, this is a classic time of year for that, especially to your point. We're having a heck of a year, and it's coming on the heels of a fantastic 19 and 20 as well. So I think it's an appropriate time, right, to look forward at what you might need coming up from your portfolio and possibly trim some of those winners. So I think it's pretty understandable.
Kendall, what's your take on events?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head when we talked about the inflation report coming out this week. It's what kind of dominated a lot of conversations with clients. It was a pretty large number, and I think that people tend to get kind of sucked into those headlines, the quick gotcha headlines, and I try to circle them back to, you know, let's take a big picture look at things. Like you just said, year to date, market's doing fantastic. Overall, the way that we look at inflation, right, is not to continue throwing this word out there, but that for the most part, it's transitory, and that a lot of it's supply chain bottleneck issues. And, you know, eventually those are going to figure themselves out. And I think there's just a lot of things to be optimistic about. So I try to circle back that conversation, take it away from kind of those negative headlines and circle back.
Chris, I read a interesting research report from Jeffrey Kleintop from Schwab the other day. He said that we may be closer to the end of the supply chain problems not the beginning of the supply chain problems. He went so far as to predict that we could have a glut of all sorts of items later next year. You know, pretty interesting to look at that. One of his issues is that overall demand is slightly elevated, but the economy's lopsided now because we still don't spend what we used to spend on services, going out to eat, sporting events, concerts, theater, what have you, and we're spending more on stuff. And so overall, consumer spending is slightly elevated, but this focus on stuff. So I found it really interesting for him to chart and look at in periods in the past when we've had bottleneck issues, you know, how long did they last? You know, a year or so is the answer. So that gives me hope that, as Kendall said, the inflation numbers could in fact be transitory. And I think it's one of the reasons why the 10-year Treasury yield didn't explode to the upside this week. You know, 1.58 teeny, you know, long-term yield, as you know, is 5.5%.
Maybe the sign of when we're coming to the end or at peak worries about supply chain is when you see a daily report every single day about how many, you know, ships are backed up in the LA port. You know, usually that's a kind of a contraindicator when it's making mainstream news day after day after day. You know, I think you're just right on the changing dynamic of what consumers are spending their money on. I mean, you look at retail sales pre-pandemic, you know, we were spending about $520 billion, we as consumers, $520 billion a month on a mixture of goods and services. That's bumped up to about $615 billion. So we've seen roughly a 20% increase. And a lot of that has been a shift towards goods, right? It's been things being sent to your house, you know, packages, that last mile delivery. And that's an incredible strain on the economy. You know, some of that increase in spending is because people saved so much money in 2020 because they didn't have much to go spend it on. There was clearly transfer payments from the federal government in terms of stimulus, you know, deferrals, student loans, all these other things that allowed people to save more money. You know, we saw that in the savings data, obviously last year. But eventually people start to burn through some of that excess savings to get back to their normal spending habits. You know, I think having inflation data that was hot, clearly, I mean, we're talking 6.2% year over year. That'll come down mostly because we're, you know, as we said before, when GDP print was so high in the second quarter, we're not going to have that continuously going forward. We'll get back to a more normal growth environment. And similarly, the inflation environment will return to normal as well.
It seems that almost every other client I talk to is buying a new couch. You know, I think everybody got locked up at home and they're looking at that old ratty couch for a year and a half and then can't take it anymore. She told me that she put the order in months ago. They told her 3 months, and now they're telling her the couch will come in next April. So by the time the last of us buys a new couch, I think they're going to have an oversupply of couches out there. But in the meantime, get your couch order in quick, I think.
Yeah, and to your point, Bob, we saw some reports coming out earlier this week that you might think is actually counterintuitive. You're seeing companies running down their inventories right now, but that's, I think, because they're forecasting that same thing, that we're going to get this bottleneck figured out at some point in the future, and they don't want to get stuck with massive over-inventory at that point when stuff starts free-flowing again. So it's interesting to see them tightening inventory levels in a market where you think that they'd be trying to bolster them. So that might be another indicator.
You know, Dave, an interesting data point came out recently. To me, that underscores the strength of the U.S. economy. Number of workers who quit jobs in September was the highest ever, almost 500,000 people. That, you know, some of that is you can't find childcare. Some of that is because of COVID concerns. But I think a whole lot of it is that people quit jobs thinking that I'll be able to get another job, a better job, fairly quickly. So I was encouraged by that.
Yeah. And I think the fact that there's 11 million jobs posted gives people that confidence too, that, hey, I can probably pretty much get a job anytime I want, right? So I can be choosier. Maybe I'm, you know, not happy in my current position. Maybe that, to your point, I'm having some trouble getting daycare coverage. But it is giving unemployed and employees in general, just great options out there with the amount of openings that are there, and they're in a pretty good bargaining position right now.
You know, we've been talking here about supply chain bottlenecks and how it tends to be at least short-term inflationary. I saw that the semiconductor industry is expected to return to balance by mid-next year, with the potential for overcapacity the year after. I mean, think of that. One of the main causes and drivers of the supply chain shortage, and they think that we'll have an excess of semiconductors fairly soon. So, you know, I always trust the financial markets. I tend not to care about what the prognosticators, present company excluded, have to say on it, because look at what big money is saying. And big money is telling you that the implied inflation rate is a little over 2% for the next 10 years. Well, that's what we averaged for the last 10 years, and things worked out okay. You know, we, of course, could be wrong on this. There are all sorts of things that could happen that would push it higher. But for my money, I trust the yield on the 10-year Treasury. I thought it was pretty interesting to see the yield curve flatten out a little bit this week, you know, in reaction to the Labor Department report on the inflation numbers. So a flattening yield curve basically tells us that the Fed's going to raise rates. Well, we pretty much knew that. And the futures market in Chicago now has 82% chance of at least two Fed rate increases next year. But that's nothing compared to what we've been through here the last 10 years with rate increases. So, you know, markets tend to be a little bit more volatile with rate increases coming. First time around, it's, oh, you guys are finally doing something about inflation. They have to go a third or a fourth round, then the attitude shifts to, how, oh, you must be really worried about inflation. You keep raising rates. But a flat yield curve, Chris, tells us that on the long end, inflation not much of an issue. Short end, to expect a couple of increases in the overnight rate.
Yeah, the flattening of the yield curve, to me, I read that as, well, the market's saying long-term inflation will get under control. And at the same time, long-term, I don't expect, you know, the U.S. economy to surprisingly become a 3 or 4% GDP economy. You know, we're still, in many ways, the same economy that we were pre-pandemic, which was not a high-growth economy. I mean, just the nature of the demographics and the rate of workforce growth, we're not going to worry about overheating based on those two underlying trends. And I think that's what the bond market's telling me is, you know, if it'd be surprising to see a case of stagflation where we wouldn't have high levels of GDP growth but had high levels of inflation. The inflation that we're seeing right now is mostly because of pent-up retail spending that's coming through in a short time period, and the supply chain can't keep up with it. So looking forward, market's saying they're not worried. Of course, it could be wrong, but that's what I read in the market as I look forward.
Chris, as you know, growth and technology shares tend to underperform in an inflationary environment. By contrast, financial stocks tend to benefit from the potential for higher interest rates. We kind of saw that play out this week with a lot of the tech names that are listed on the NASDAQ underperform, and bank stocks in particular do pretty good.
Yeah, we've paid attention to this quite a bit this year in terms of what direction is the 10-year Treasury heading, and then what does that mean in terms of market leadership? A rising interest rate on the 10-year Treasury, which is usually accompanied with higher expectations of inflation, is not as great for tech businesses or businesses that are going to have profits out in the further out in the future, as they have to discount by a higher interest rate. Whereas you compare that to a slower growing financial business or an industrial business that has earnings today, their earnings don't get hit as much by that discount. You know, you take it even a step further. One of the big benefits of a technology firm in this slow growth environment that we had for the last 10 years was it was an asset light business. They didn't carry a lot of assets. They didn't have a lot of real estate. You know, if there's not a high level of inflation, that doesn't hurt them. But in a period, if there was a higher level of inflation or a higher level of interest rate, having hard assets that appreciate, having real estate that appreciate, there's value in that. So you definitely see a changing market leadership as that dynamic changes within the economy and interest rates and inflation.
David pretty much speaks to the issue of the importance of diversifying your stock portfolio. the importance of owning value stocks that are, among other things, loaded with insurance companies and other financials that benefit in a rising rate environment, and also to own the tech stocks, as Chris pointed out, they were on a tear the last 10 years.
Yeah, and couldn't have a better example than what we've seen this year. I mean, look at the seesaw battle that the two sectors have had since the beginning of the year. I mean, we came into the front end of the year, everybody thought, okay, here we come, value's taking the lead and growth's in trouble, and then abruptly we saw a turnaround. And they've kind of gone back and forth and exchanged their roles there, and it ended out pretty even. But, difficult to make a guess on that, right, in the near term, who's going to be in full charge of that growth as far as prices might go. So having a footprint, a good stable footprint in both of those sectors is I think, just really smart investing.
Kendall, let's go overseas here just for a minute. I continue to be disappointed by the returns of the overseas markets. I noticed on Wednesday the dollar hit the highest level in 16 months. As you know, that makes it really tough to make money if you're denominated in dollars, as we all are here. Prices are cheap for a reason overseas. They're slow to come out of COVID. They were slow to come out of the financial crisis. They've got all sorts of issues. But my guess is, the next couple years could spell an entry point for us to increase international exposure. Sure, it'd help if the dollar came down a little bit, and that might be a while. What are you telling clients these days?
Yeah, I mean, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. The big thing that I like to talk about is not getting too overexposed to your overseas stock allocation. It's about finding that balance, like with everything else, whether it's growth to value, overseas to U.S., it's about keeping a close eye on that, like you said, with the high dollar, the returns from your overseas stocks get converted back into dollars. So you don't necessarily want to get too far out with the strong dollar. Like you said, again, if we see the dollar come down a little bit, overseas becomes a little more attractive. But again, I think at the end of the day, it comes down to making sure you have a right piece of the overseas in your overall portfolio. You're not getting too out of line with everything else, and making sure that you're getting some exposure, but don't hang yourself out too far.
Chris, you've been now at the firm here a number of years. I remember not long after you first started, you presented to the Investment Advisory Committee a research piece you did on the aggressive end of emerging markets. And I was fascinated by that. Because, you went on about potential opportunities in the Middle East, potential opportunities in Africa. What are your current thoughts on that?
Well, maybe I was a little bright-eyed and bushy-tailed at that point, focusing on frontier markets and areas of the, frankly, the markets that probably don't make a lot of sense for a lot of investors because of all the additional levels of risk there. I do think it remains interesting that the thought process of a high increase in new consumers entering middle class and being able to spend money just seems really attractive. But I got to admit, my thought process on this has probably changed as I've become, more aware of the U.S. companies that are able to take advantage of getting access into those markets and selling goods to consumers everywhere in the world maybe it's short-sighted to want to just focus strictly on businesses that happen to be headquartered in, Nigeria or be certain areas of Latin America where you see high levels of demographic and GDP growth. So there's plenty of ways to access that might be a little bit more prudent than what I thought as a 22-year-old coming out of college at that time.
But what I walked away with back then was a reminder that you gave the group that when you invest, it's really important to look way down the road. And I thought your point was right on the money, that at some point down the road that will offer some opportunities. And isn't that what investing is all about? Is looking at the landscape, trying to figure out, where are their opportunities? And then against that, weigh the risks involved. So perhaps the risks were too high at that point in time. But that's really the essence of investing to me. And you help remind us all of that, that, you know, it's important to look around, to try to get a sense of what's attractive, what's cheap, relatively speaking. Frontier markets might be too extreme for a lot of our clients. But I thought the point was right on the money, that at some stage down the road, frontier investing and emergent market investing, I think, will be the talk of the town. Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.